Hello and welcome to this week's Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly and I'm the founder of the UK charity Yes to Life. The Yes to Life show is all about cancer and integrative medicine and makes a point of looking at all the latest advances in integrative oncology, as it's called, and talking to clinicians, researchers and practitioners who are working to improve care and outcomes. Charities, of course, play an important role too in filling gaps in care and raising awareness, much as Yes to Life is doing through this show and its other services. Today, I'm talking to two people representing another UK charity that is focused on a group of cancers that can have a massive impact on lives, but next to some other types would be considered rare, and therefore they've received almost no attention compared to the more common cancers. Sarcoma UK is making it their mission to change this state of affairs and to raise awareness and understanding of sarcomas. I'm all too aware personally of the need for this, as the impact that the diagnosis of a rare and aggressive sarcoma had on my 9-year-old daughter Bryony and our family was not something I'd wish on anyone. I'm talking to the chief executive of Sarcoma UK, Richard Davidson, and also Helen Stradling, who is a specialist sarcoma nurse now working with Sarcoma UK, directly supporting those in need of help and advice. I'm talking to Richard and Helen over Skype in London. Hi, Richard and Helen. Thanks very much for coming on the Yes to Life show today.
Hello.
We're going to talk about an unusual group of cancers. They're very rare, and as a result, they're little understood by doctors and scientists, and most people actually have never heard of them. They're called sarcomas. And just to get the territory established, I was wondering if you, Helen, could start us off by describing what they are and who are most likely to get diagnosed with one.
Okay, so sarcoma is cancer. There are a number of cancers that arise from the cells in the body that put us together. So blood vessels, muscle, bone, and fat, to name a few. There are over 100 different types of sarcoma, and we know that they affect approximately 5,300 people in the UK each year, which equates to about 15 diagnoses a day. They can occur anywhere in the body and in any age range, and we know with the cases of the bone sarcomas, which unfortunately like to affect children and young adults, they equate to about 670 cases a year.
Right, okay, so this is a big problem for a relatively small group of people compared with other cancers.
It is, but that makes it even more important to make sure we get diagnoses made early and treatment started.
Exactly, yes. So Richard, you're the chief executive of Sarcoma UK, the organisation's exclusively working for the benefit of people with sarcoma. Can you give us a sense of where the efforts of Sarcoma UK are mainly directed?
So Sarcoma UK was a charity that was set up about 8 years ago by a patient who looked around and was diagnosed with sarcoma and thought that there wasn't very much information and support for sarcoma patients, and that there was no research going on into this rare and misunderstood cancer. Mm. So he set up the organisation. We've been going 8 years. We invest in research, and both clinical and basic research, and more recently genomic research, which is important. But we also support information and support. So we have a support line that takes calls from patients and families.
That's fantastic, yeah. And the event that's prompted me to talk to you today is the release of a new report. Do you want to tell us about the report and its findings?
Yes. So the report that is called The Loneliest Cancer has revealed that despite sarcoma having a devastating impact on patients and families, it remains little known. And it found that 75% of people don't know what sarcoma is, and that lack of awareness is amongst the general public, but it's also amongst healthcare professionals such as GPs, and as well as silent symptoms, this can lead to late diagnosis and misdiagnosis, which often has heartbreaking consequences. So this makes sarcoma the loneliest cancer, I think, for many patients and their families.
So this is a survey, basically, to find out what's happening on the ground, how much awareness there is.
Yes, it's an awareness, but it's also looking at some of the treatment options and some of the challenges that are faced by sarcoma patients and the sarcoma doctors too.
Mm. So can we just go back to what you mentioned about late or misdiagnosis and the fact that, yes, a GP might see one of these in his whole career or two at the most, I understand. So this is a problem, isn't it?
Yes, it's exactly as you say. GPs don't see very many, and of course there are 100 different subtypes that all present slightly differently. So with any one type of sarcoma, it might be that a GP only sees one or perhaps two in their career. So it's incredibly hard to diagnose. Mm. And that's why we are stressing that we must do all that we can. If people have any signs or symptoms that they're worried about, that they must go to their GP as soon as possible and just get it checked out.
Mm. And what do you think the answers could be in terms of the GP's own awareness of the particular symptoms of sarcomas?
Well, you know, it's things like the report, it's things like the Loneliest Cancer campaign that's about making sure that awareness is raised. So not just amongst the public, because it's great if the public know about the signs and can spot things early on, but GPs and other healthcare professionals also need to know what sarcoma is, know what the signs and symptoms are, and do something about it and refer patients on to specialist sarcoma centres as soon as possible.
Yes, because if someone has a sarcoma, it's not necessarily that difficult to find that out, is it? The diagnostics in a specialist centre are not a problem, are they?
No. I think that once people are referred to a specialist centre, they will be able to pick it up. And they will also know the best treatment options and the best way of dealing with the condition. So it's that early awareness that's quite key.
Yes. You know, this is a problem. Well, first of all, it's shared with quite a few other cancers, which are a little bit invisible for a long period and can similarly be rather devastating as a result. But also, it's a general problem in Britain, which is kind of acknowledged by the NHS, isn't it, that late or misdiagnosis is an issue and leads to situations where we're trying to treat very late-stage patients.
Yes, I think early detection and early diagnosis is worse in the UK than in other countries. But there is a real push to make sure that happens as soon as possible, so that people are aware of the signs and do something about them.
Mm-hmm. I wonder whether this is one area where computer systems can actually really help GPs with the rarer conditions that they maybe won't come across so often, to actually sort of flag up things that they might not think of otherwise.
Yeah, so early warning signs and triggers, yeah, absolutely could play a role. And if people can spot them and do something about them as quickly as possible. We sarcoma can be problematic because people don't present symptoms until the condition becomes more serious. Mm. But if people have visible lumps that are growing in size, that are possibly painful and usually on their arms and legs or trunk or occasionally in other places, or have bone pain or tenderness, those are all warning signs and symptoms of sarcoma. So if they can then go to their GP, we know that if the majority of people that are diagnosed are diagnosed when their sarcoma is about 10 centimetres, which is about
Wow.
the same size as a baked bean tin.
That's huge.
If we can get people... Absolutely. So if we can get people to be diagnosed when it's smaller, when it's about the size of a golf ball or 5 centimetres, mm. then we know that the outcomes will be better.
Right. So that's been proven, basically, is that treatment at that stage can be largely successful.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm digging into this a bit because I've actually got personal experience of this. My own daughter had a sarcoma at age 9. And, yeah, it was the case that the diagnosis was extremely late and it was misdiagnosed up until that point, you know. So it's definitely a problem. And certainly the GPs in question had never seen one in their lifetime. So it's something that we have to find a way to deal with if we're going to improve the situation.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear about your daughter, but it's something that we hear over and again from patients and their families that the diagnosis just came too late. And if it had come earlier, and sometimes it goes months with being misdiagnosed and it's delayed, and that can have catastrophic consequences. So yeah. We're just keen to get as many sarcomas as possible diagnosed as early as possible.
Mm-hmm. So it's the confusion quite often with kind of structural problems, the pains and things. You quite often, I hear of people who've been spending time going to see osteopaths or physiotherapists and things about pains they're experiencing, but actually they're not that kind of structural problem.
Absolutely. I mean, we know that 20% of patients who visited their GP were actually started on treatment for another condition.
Right.
And so it's really key that we do get these patients, into the specialist centres early, and for people to think, could this be something other than your common run-of-the-mill, things that people are treated for.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very interesting. Yeah, there's a funny sort of quirk of nature is that, of course, patients don't want to hear bad news, and so they quite like the, well, it's probably only sort of line. And funnily enough, it seems that doctors can quite often go along with that. The most likely thing is something that's not very bad at all. But I had an interesting comment from a doctor once who said that when somebody comes in the door, I ask myself the question, what's the very worst thing this could be? Because that's the place to start from.
Yeah. And I think that anything that's why the public awareness needs to go hand in hand with GP awareness, because it needs to be on both sides. Because if there is a disconnect between the public knowing lots about sarcoma or the warning signs and GPs not, then that's a problem. So that's why the Loneliest Cancer Report today really does try and focus on both the public and GP awareness.
Well, that's excellent. Hmm. Okay, so Helen, I wonder if I could ask you what's on offer from the NHS currently in terms of treating sarcomas.
Absolutely. So unfortunately, our treatments for sarcoma have remained relatively the same over the last 20 or 30 years. So the main treatment options for people with sarcoma are surgery, chemotherapy and radiotherapy. Now, depending on which type of sarcoma somebody is diagnosed with will depend on which treatment options are available to them, because they're not all appropriate for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We now have, and people may know about, the proton beam therapy, which is now available for people within the UK. Previously, they had to go abroad for that. And so we are getting more treatment options, and different trials are coming up with new drugs. And so there is light at the end of the tunnel. We just need to continue with those trials and research to get more treatment options.
Mm. And this is something the charity is driving?
Yes, we are investing a lot in both basic clinical research and genomics research, because we know that those treatments haven't changed in such a long time, and
right.
Actually patients deserve better. So we are very, very keen to raise money to fund that research and clinical trials.
Mm. Well, I can bear out what you're saying. The description of the treatment sounds exactly the same as my daughter had decades ago. So, interesting. You mentioned proton beam there. I've done a couple of shows on proton beam therapy. Do you feel this brings a completely new approach to treating sarcomas, and it has promise for better treatment?
Yes, I mean, it's absolutely, as Helen's pointed out, previously patients had to go to Germany or to the US to have proton beam therapy. It's now in the UK, certainly in Manchester and soon to be in London. So that is showing promise, but it's not for all sarcoma patients. So we need to make sure that we're investing in many different avenues of treatment and clinical trials to really make sure that as many sarcoma patients as possible can benefit.
Mm-hmm. And what avenues in drug treatment are being pursued?
Well, there are the targeted tumour-agnostic drugs that are successfully coming through the European approval process, which is great news, again, for some sarcoma patients. It's not for all.
Mm-hmm.
And there are additional drugs that are also in the pipeline with a decision on approval imminent. And there are changes, and there are research going on into smaller scale ways of treating and dealing with the different types of sarcoma, but they're small scale, and what we're keen is to really find a thing that will make the step change in sarcoma treatment, and that's why genomics research is so exciting and so interesting. If we're able to, and Sarcoma UK has invested £250,000 in genomics research last year, and we will include a similar investment this year. Mm-hmm. That shows the potential of really making a step change difference in sarcoma treatment.
Mm. Okay, so I'm interested to know how the UK compares with other countries in terms of treatment success. Are we doing better or worse than other countries?
I think across the board, the UK generally does worse than most other Western countries in terms of cancer outcomes. And we've seen quite a large investment in improving those figures over the last 20 years or so. But sarcoma survival rates, 5-year survival rates, are still only 55%. So although we've seen progress and improvements in certain types of cancer, the obvious being breast cancer or melanoma, sarcoma is lagging behind, and that's why it's really important that we have a real focus on sarcoma if we're to make inroads. Mm-hmm. And one of the long-term plan, the NHS's long-term plan that was launched earlier this year, set a target for 75% of all cancers to be diagnosed at stage 1 or 2, so early in the stage. Mm. But the challenge for us is that sarcomas aren't always logged, aren't monitored. So we've only got about 37% of sarcomas that are fully have full data and information on them. So we really need to persuade doctors to make sure that they are logging the data and information on stage of their sarcomas, so that we can make inroads.
Can you give any reason why that is?
Well, I think some specialists would say that actually it's very difficult with sarcoma, because it doesn't matter what stage the sarcoma is, because there are so limited treatments, they would get whatever they're given anyway, because there are so many such limited treatments. But it is really important that sarcomas are staged, because it does help with lots of things. It helps with investment, it helps with early diagnosis and detection, and it does help with treatment options too. So we would try and encourage, and we are trying to encourage, sarcoma specialists to log all the information they can on their sarcoma. So the specific type of sarcoma, the particular stage it is, and the prognosis and so on.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a bit of a circular argument, isn't it? That one which says, well, sarcomas don't get much attention, so we're not going to give them much attention. It's terrible, really. Yeah, of course. I mean, you think that any cancer deserves to at least be recorded well for the sake of, knowledge base. So, I'm glad to hear you're encouraging that to happen. Okay, so are there any other reasons, apart from the rarity of the cancer and therefore maybe the amount of money behind research, that's a challenge particularly in progressing treatment for sarcomas?
I think the complexity of the condition and the fact that there is well over 100 different subtypes of sarcoma just make things very difficult, because what is true for one type of sarcoma is very different from another. So bone sarcomas present differently from certain soft tissue sarcomas or gastrointestinal stromal tumours. So they're all very different diseases, conditions. They're grouped together under sarcoma. So it means that makes it really, really tricky. And actually, I think that adds to the loneliness, because if you've got a particular subtype of sarcoma, you might not meet anyone. There might not be anyone in the country who has the same type of sarcoma as you. Mm. So that's really isolating for not just the patient, but also for the family members too.
Mm. Yeah,
and that's certainly something we hear from patients and their families.
Mm. There's certainly an issue. I know with my daughters, I think there are about 50 children a year in the UK got diagnosed with that particular one. And so, yeah, pretty unusual. I wonder if I could ask you both, we've established sarcomas are not getting a lot of attention. However, you, Richard, you're heading up an organisation that's focusing entirely on sarcomas, and Helen, you're a specialist sarcoma nurse. I'd just be interested to know what led you both to be focusing in this area.
Well, I've only been involved with Sarcoma UK for just over a year, and I've worked in cancer research and cancer organisations for my whole career. And my father-in-law was diagnosed with sarcoma about 8 years ago, and unfortunately died after quite intensive treatment. But that's what brought me to Sarcoma UK, and that's right. what gives me my interest in the disease.
How about you, Helen?
So basically, when I was doing my nurse training, I very much liked both areas of orthopaedics and oncology. Mm-hmm. And when I qualified, I was lucky enough to work with one of the specialist bone and soft tissue sarcoma teams in Oxford. And I spent 18 years there looking after sarcoma patients and their families. And we know that those sarcoma teams in the specialist centres work extremely hard, mm-hmm. and they don't always have the time to spend with the patients and their families that they would want to. And so the Sarcoma UK support line, of which I'm one of the members that answers that, gives that time for anybody that has queries or questions about sarcoma, any part of their pathway. We're more than happy for people to call us or email us. And it just allows me to use that knowledge in a way that's very different from my nursing hospital background,
yes.
but still being effective and helping patients.
So you're responding to a gap you felt that there's a patient need, basically, and this job is an opportunity to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, from a family point of view, depending on the age of the patient, the family may not get access to the specialist teams, and so they only get parts of information that the patients want them to have. And we know that sarcoma is rare, and we know that if you Google sarcoma, you come up with loads of information that may or may not be relevant. And so what we very much like to do on the support line is give people time and our ability to use our expertise so that people are getting the correct information for them or their family member.
Right.
Because obviously with the so many different subtypes and different options for different subtypes and different age groups, information that is imperative for them is really key to keep them focused and keep them supported as they should be.
Mm-hmm. Right. You brought back in again there one thing that was said at the outset, is that there's a whole range of different types of sarcoma. There's also, it applies to all ages. Now, you know, I've obviously been rather focused on the fact that this is something that seems to apply to young people. But can you give me an idea, is it equally distributed amongst all ages, or is it something that is more younger or older?
So there are different subtypes that are more, so for example, with the bone sarcomas, we know that some of them do affect more children and young adults, but there's also certain types of bone sarcoma that affect people in the older ages. So it is really difficult to say that a certain age group, you know, we'll get a certain type of sarcoma, because sarcomas do different things in different people, and every day new cases happen that we've never seen before, and
really?
So there are certain types, but we just need to raise awareness so that anybody that gets a sarcoma diagnosis at any age is in a specialist center and getting the treatment that they need.
Thank you. Okay. The Yes Life Show is all about integrative medicine and cancer, so we take a very broad view of cancer and cancer treatment. And one of the subjects we feature a lot is looking at the aspects of someone's lifestyle that could lead to a diagnosis and the aspects of their lifestyle that could support a full and permanent recovery. I was wondering how much is known about the causes of sarcomas.
Very little, I think, and on certain sarcomas, even less is known. So some of them, the education is very scarce. So So that's why when we're talking about basic research, it's really important that we do that so that we can help understand sarcomas.
Mm.
But I think in terms of diagnosis, you know, sometimes you get people who are diagnosed when they're doing sport or activities or, you know, so all of those things kind of help and can aid diagnosis. So, you know, if you're a, you know, we hear of patients who are diagnosed after they have a knock at rugby or they fall over or
yes.
they break a leg, and those things aid in the process of diagnosing sarcoma as early as possible.
Hmm. That's an interesting one you mentioned there, because that's a case of an injury being the kind of the trigger to finding out about a sarcoma. There, you know, in many cases, it doesn't seem to be clear whether the injury was actually directly related to the sarcoma or whether it was just the reason they found it. In the case of my daughters, it was definitely the root cause. The injury happened first and the sarcoma developed later. How much is known about the connection between damaged tissue of one kind or another and the development of sarcomas?
Again, I think very little, and your point kind of highlights the lack of information and education on sarcoma and why so much research is needed, that those connections aren't well researched and well known about. And although sarcomas make up about 2% of all cancers, I think I would argue that actually it's quite a number of years behind the research that's going on into other cancers. So other cancers have benefited from research into causes, prevention, you know, screening, diagnostics, and sarcoma isn't anywhere near there. So we're quite a long way behind people. Hence why our founder set up the charity in the first place 8 years ago, because that information and evidence wasn't there.
Right. But would it be said that injury of some kind was one of the potential root causes of a sarcoma? Is that recognised as one of the routes to being diagnosed?
No, I think it's a route to diagnosis. So I definitely think it's something that's, and we hear a lot of this about people who get a knock at sport or fall over and are diagnosed. But I don't think it's true to say that it's a cause of sarcomas.
Right. That's like an association, if you like, then. Are there any other sort of recognised associations at all?
No, not for sarcomas. I mean, obviously there are, as you know, for other cancers, but not for sarcomas.
Mm, wow. So it's really, we're at the very beginnings, basically, surprisingly, after all this time.
Yes. Yeah, and I think that's a key message that we want to get across, that it's something that has been underinvested in the past, and you know, research is very difficult and early on, and clinical trials are non-existent, or if they do exist, they tend to be multinational, because of course there aren't the patient numbers just in the UK, so the importance of working across countries to kind of invest in those clinical trials. So that's something that I think is important, but we are further behind, I think, than most of the cancers. Hence why I think it is it does deserve a spotlight, and it's great that people are talking about sarcomas today.
Mm, absolutely. And at the other end, people who've been through treatment, is there any evidence of anything that people can do to help themselves which will improve their chances? I mean, you know, in a lot of cancers, for example, you know, something like exercise would be pointed to as a great way of recovering and re-establishing good health. Is that true of sarcomas, or don't we know?
I guess the simple answer is we know that if you're needing treatments for sarcoma or any cancers, that exercise and a good diet all helps to aid that. I don't think we know of anything specifically relating to sarcomas, but we obviously give the general advice, like you've mentioned, that, you know, if you can be as active as you can and you know, have a healthy diet, it can't do any harm at all.
Right. So basically it would be Any general advice for people to regain their health that would apply to any other cancer is likely to apply just the same.
Okay. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so just want to come back. We've already talked a little bit about, this major problem with lack of awareness, lack of diagnosis. Are there some things you can say now about what the public should be on the lookout for, which would point them towards the need to see a specialist?
Yes, so certainly in terms of bone pain or tenderness, can be a symptom of some sarcomas, particularly bone sarcomas. People should look out for lumps or bumps, their arms, their midriff. And those lumps occasionally will grow in size and be possibly painful.
Mm.
So it's about spotting those things and actually going to the GP in the first instance and encouraging them to refer people on to sarcoma specialist centres. There's 16 around the country, so it's really, really important that people get into those specialist centres as quickly as possible.
Right.
And it's worth saying, just so that people aren't frightened, that most lumps and bumps won't be sarcoma.
Of course.
And we do a lot of work, talking people through that on the support line and when people email in. So most people won't be sarcoma, but it's worth getting it discounted. So, definitely. We would encourage everyone to go to a GP.
Better safe than sorry. You mentioned bone pain. This is obviously, maybe it's something that people have never experienced, bone pain. It's very horrible, I understand. I don't think I particularly experienced it myself. I only know how bad it can be. But is there any way that people can, do people immediately know if they got bone pain? That's the question, I suppose.
I suppose that it depends how severe it is. Part of the problem with bone pain and tenderness is that often it happens in younger people, and it's put down to growing pains, or it's put down to your body changing and growing. So so it's often discarded. But I think for patients that we speak to or call the support line, it's very painful and very difficult, and actually, people should listen to patients. So if they're, bone pain is an unusual symptom. So if you've got bone pain, or you hear of someone who's got bone pain, then that is a difficult symptom that should be acted on.
Mm. Okay. So you already mentioned, Helen, that there you are. You're working on your own helpline there, and people are probably ringing up with these kind of concerns. Are some of the people who are ringing you up people who are yet to be diagnosed?
Yeah, absolutely. We take calls from absolutely anybody that's got questions about sarcoma. Some people may not even have been to their GP yet, and they want to ring and talk to somebody about their symptoms. And obviously, as Richard said, there are certain red flags that would make us more concerned about sarcoma. And we're just very clear with people that if they do have any of the worrying symptoms, they need to get to their GP to get that diagnosis either made or discounted.
Right. And say there was a case where somebody had been to their GP, they'd been told that their child was just suffering from growing pains and they weren't entirely convinced. Parents, mothers are very often very tuned into their children's health conditions and can sense when something's not right. If they called you up, would you in some way support them being taken more seriously by their GP if you felt it was appropriate?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously we can't refer people to specialist centres or be involved in their actual clinical care. But as you say, mothers have this gut instinct that they know when something's wrong. And I think the key thing is, if somebody is worried and you have got worrying symptoms, just go into the GP and say, look, is this a possible sarcoma? Just get that word out there.
Right.
Because if it isn't, then the GP hopefully will be able to say, okay, you don't have any worrying features of a sarcoma, or actually, perhaps this is, and so what we need to do is refer you to one of the specialist teams.
Good. All right. Well, I think this is good. In a way, you said you need to get the word out there. You need to talk about the thing head on rather than it's probably only, which tends to avoid the issue and avoid the concerns of, say, the parent in this case as well. And they go away rather unsatisfied and still feeling worried.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, if somebody is concerned and they have got worrying features, then it is to talk about it, to mention that word, because, you know, we've already mentioned GPs may not automatically think of it because of the lack of numbers of patients they'll be seeing. So bringing that word into the conversation can only help.
Okay. And going back to your helpline again, do I assume that you speak to people at every stage from pre-diagnosis to whenever?
Absolutely, yes. We are more than happy to speak to anybody at any point during their journey. We speak to people from pre-diagnosis, through treatments, into follow-up, and also to people that are unfortunately bereaved. We are more than happy to speak to anybody that would like to speak to our experts.
Okay, well, that's really great. Finally, I just wanted to ask you a bit about your plans for the charity. You're clearly intent on raising awareness of the issues around sarcomas. What else do you plan to change in the coming few years?
Well, we have ambitious plans to grow the charity and grow investment, not just in research, although research is something that we feel passionately about. We want to encourage other organisations to also increase, some kind of generic cancer organisations to increase their spend and investment in sarcoma. But also we need to make sure that we are supporting and informing the public. So investing in our support line and our other information and materials is also key. A third element is also about the awareness raising, and this campaign is part of that. But also we need to redouble our efforts to make sure that we are raising awareness with the right people. We're telling, you know, so that people are aware of the signs, the symptoms, they know what to do. We really want to make sure that it's not the loneliest cancer, and that it's, you know, we make breakthroughs and we are there to support and help patients and their families that are going through this horrible, devastating disease. So we know that we are nowhere near as big as we should be or as we want to be, and we want to make sure that sarcoma is the awareness of sarcoma is raised over the coming few years.
And what are your biggest hopes for improvements in diagnosis and treatment? Where do you think the quickest wins are?
Well, I think we're working with other organisations to see if there is work that we can do on vague symptoms or symptoms that are joined together that might be true of sarcoma that are also true of other conditions. So that's an area that we want to go down. We are also hopeful, and that's why we've invested in genomics research, because we hope that genomics research can uncover some answers for early diagnosis, detection and treatments of sarcomas. We've seen huge strides forward in breast cancer and even in bowel cancer. We think that sarcoma is also ripe for that. It does have genetic markers, so we believe that there is progress to be made in that area, and we think that rather than making smaller incremental changes and improvements to that 55% survival, 5-year survival rates, that we believe that genomics can help us make that bigger change that is so desperately needed by sarcoma patients and their families.
Well, I wholeheartedly agree with you on this sort of incremental change business. I mean, adding the odd percent and everything, well, of course, it's massive for someone somewhere. But, you know, we haven't got the time for that, have we? I mean, cancer's moving faster than we are, basically, and we need to get our skates on. Interesting, you referred again there to the thing about diagnosis. As a single stroke, really, to change the statistics drastically, achieving what the government target is that you mentioned earlier about actually increasing the number of people who are diagnosed at an early stage is probably the single biggest thing we could do very quickly in order to improve the results.
Absolutely. If we can get to 75% of sarcomas being diagnosed at stage 1 or 2, then we would be seeing huge differences in survival rates. The problem is, as I mentioned before, that only 37% of sarcomas have their stage data. So we're so far behind that. We're so far away from that that actually a focus and energies into that area would be very, very welcome.
Yeah, definitely. The only sort of heartening thing, if you like, on tackling that statistic is that, of course, it doesn't just apply to sarcomas, it applies to all cancers virtually, yeah. that if the diagnosis could be sooner, the results would be better.
Absolutely.
So we could all join forces to bring that one about.
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. Well, we're just about out of time. Do you want to just tell listeners about your support line and your website for them to have a look?
Yeah, absolutely. So our support line is open Monday to Friday from 10 until 3. People can contact us on 0808 801 0401 or email us at supportline@sarcoma.org.uk, and also visit our website www.sarcoma.org.uk, where we have lots of sarcoma information.
Well, that's fantastic. All right, Richard and Helen, thanks so much for talking to me today.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Credit must go to Sarcoma UK for taking up the banner on behalf of sarcoma patients and doing something to improve on the glacial rate of change that's been their lot up to now. Some of you may have followed the thrills and spills of the big week off back in the summer, my 7-day supervised fast. This generated quite a lot of interest and discussion, as well as a decent slab of cash in the form of donations to Yes to Life. Well, we've decided to open the doors to you, the public, to join in with the big week off by way of a January detox and a great start to 2020. You won't have to do a full 7 days if you're new to fasting, as there will be other shorter options as well. But the whole thing will be programmed by experts. There will be opportunities to share the trip with everyone else involved over social media and to get feedback. And, of course, very importantly, your thoroughly impressed friends who've never even skipped a meal will sponsor you handsomely. Whether you're a fully signed up hardcore faster or just someone who's thought of trying it sometime, this is not to be missed, and all the information you need to fast safely and with a maximum benefit will be provided. The result? A massive boost to your health and well-being and a much needed injection of cash into Yes to Life. A genuine win-win. So watch out on the Yes to Life website and on social media for further news under the hashtag TheBigWeekOff. A quick reminder also to book your place sooner rather than later at the Yes to Life London Conference, Nutritional Science and Cancer, which is on the 21st of March 2020. It may seem a way off right now, but places are selling steadily, and for this event, they are strictly limited, so to be safe, book now. Details can be found by following the links from the Yes to Life homepage. That's yestolife.org.uk. Thanks for listening today. I hope you can listen again next week to the Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.